This is apartment 303.
Didn't they say 304? No, 303. I wrote it down twice.
Apartment 303, which I've definitely heard of.
Greetings, human beings, and welcome back to Apartment 303, a podcast for community fans. My name is Dave, and alongside my co-host Dan, we are here every month to discuss all things community, each and every layer of the show, and why we love it so much. On today's episode, Dan and I are going to be discussing the three birthday episodes from the show Community. Before we get to that, though, as always, Dan, how have you been? What have you been up to?
Oh, man, I've been good. Been a very busy and a very warm and hot summer out here in California. So the wife and I moved, so that was fun. We didn't move far. We just moved like 20 minutes down the road, but that was good. We are all set up in our new place. I'm in a new office and just been working the regular job, submitting for a bunch of other acting things, and then we'll go into strikes as well, just because it's kind of relevant to my interests, but not really since I'm non-union. But anyway, yeah, that's what's been going on here. So how are things on your side of the country?
Definitely more going on than usual with me. It turns out you are not the only one who's going to be moving this year. My wife and I are going to be moving to Colorado, of all places.
Yay!
Yes, so not to Greendale, at least not right away. We have to figure that part out once we get there.
You could be the founding member. You could start a Greendale.
Never say never.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's very, very exciting. And actually, to that end, today is going to be the last episode of Apartment 303 that is ever recorded in this studio, here in the Lexington studio. So far, we are on the backside of season 4 here of this podcast, if you can believe that. And so far, every single episode of all 4 seasons has been recorded here in this studio and produced
partially.
Here in this studio. Yeah. And at least on one end.
Yeah.
And this will be the last time for that. So a little bittersweetness there. But the good thing is that means that I get to start building a Denver studio. And, you know, next time you guys hear from us, hopefully that's going to be the first episode from the new studio.
Awesome.
So that's all the exciting stuff here out east and, well, headed your direction.
Headed west.
What is going on out there in California? Because last time we recorded, we actually had a pretty good in-depth discussion about what was going on with the writer's strike.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a few months since we recorded that conversation. Obviously, things haven't been resolved yet. I do rely on you heavily for info in this, but I do at least remember hearing that at some point actors had also joined in. Can you bring me up to speed on what's been going on out there with all of this?
I will try to do my best. So just to not even put a button, just to add that continuation onto the writers. So the writers have been striking. Their memory serves, they're over 100 days straight now. So their strike is still going strong. I believe that the large entity representing all the other studios, the AMPTP, they said they wanted to have another meeting with the Writers Guild, and then they did, and then it was basically like another slap in the face where they were like not willing to budge on any of the concessions that the writers were still looking for. So that was supposed to be, I think this past Friday, like a couple of days ago to pull back the curtain, I think that was supposed to be on August 4th, and I don't think anything came of that. I'm pretty sure they were saying it was a non-starter and the AMPT play is still like really, for lack of a better term, dicking them around. There have been awful, awful things coming out about the studio. Just there's literally an executive, something that leaked, that one of the executives said that they are going to wait out the writers until they literally lose their apartments or homes. So like these are the kind of people who are like clearly do not view these artists and these creatives as individuals. Now, when SAG joined, which was about a month ago, I'm trying to think, the best way to describe this is like LA is one of the most expensive places on the planet to live. So basically both of these unions are striking because they want cost of living increases and increases in wages. And the Writers Guild was around, if memory serves, around 12,000 people. The Actors Guild, if memory serves, is around 140,000 people. So basically there is, from these struck studios that no one is crossing picket lines, they are not making any TV or film or anything, which is why if you look online, you will see a bunch of movies that are getting pushed because they're worried they're going to run out of content. Now, a lot of the actor stuff is like, while I'm talking numbers, basically, I think it was last year, the minimum threshold for actors to qualify for health insurance under the SAG union was $26,000 per year. That's what you had to make. And 82% of SAG members did not make enough money to qualify for health insurance, if that gives you an idea of how underpaid this union is. So there's a lot of things that they're negotiating for. The AI is another sticking one where that was brought up with the writers as well. The most egregious thing I heard about AI was that AMPTP came to the table and they were like, oh, we want to scan the likeness rights for one extra, pay them once, and then use their likeness in perpetuity. And SAG was like, what the fuck? It's just some of these things are so outlandish and they're almost comically evil at this point. Because it's like when you look at the numbers, and it's easier to look online because I don't know all of the like the income numbers for those big studios, but their record profits are absolutely astronomical. So it's like the creatives are really not asking for a big chunk of that. And I'm trying to distill it down as quickly as I can and as like it concisely as I can. And I clearly don't know as much because I've had people ask me, they're like, how are you still working? Because they ask me specifically. And I'm like, well, it's easy for me because I'm non-union. The only way I could be, this could affect me, is if a union company asked me to work on a television or a film project and I crossed that picket line and then I became a scab, which intel would make me blacklisted from SAG, which is obviously not something I want because I would like to have a career in SAG. So clearly that's something I want to avoid. But there is still, like, non-union things can go on. Commercials can still go on. I've still had a bunch of auditions for commercials. I've had auditions for television and film that is non-union. I've had one. SAG is still, they're still allowing smaller productions to go, like, with micro budgets and ones that have signed waivers. So I can still audition for those. Even though I'm not in the union, that is a possibility. So it is basically just these giant companies under the AMPTP umbrella that are just being sticks in the mud and not sharing what is due to all of these creatives in order to, you know, just make a living.
Well, I certainly hope that this is the last time we have to start the podcast or even involve on the podcast talking about this continuing to be an issue.
I hope that as well.
I'm really, really looking forward to having the other side of this conversation, hopefully as soon as possible.
Only thing I will say as far as like happy news is there was a scenario, and I'm just going to bring up two other things briefly. So there was a scenario, and I think I touched on this last time we recorded. There was a scenario where all three guilds were striking at the same time. Producers don't really factor into this because a lot of them are like, they don't have a say in it. So it was writers first, and then the Directors Guild actually settled. They had an opportunity to join the strike, but they settled for, as what most people say, like not a great deal. And then the actors went on strike as well. However, I want to bring up a fourth union that is not necessarily directly involved, but I'm sure you saw that the USPS Teamsters, and Teamsters are actually, I'm pretty sure there's an overlap. I need to like actually look up for Teamsters, but Teamsters work a lot of times on sets where they're doing the like behind the scenes work, where they're doing their grips, their electricians, their, you know, PAs, they're that kind of stuff. They do a lot of behind the scenes stuff. So Teamsters themselves are a union, but then there's also UPS, and there was a huge possibility that all of the UPS workers were going to go on strike. And UPS wisely, the upper management, were like, whoa, 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 we don't want that. Because I think if the math panned out, it was like they were going to be losing $1 billion a day if the UPS workers actually went on strike. And they signed a historic agreement where UPS got all the workers got absolutely everything they wanted and that they were asking for. So it's one of those things where it's like, it doesn't directly tie in, but it's close enough to be like, see, these are why these strikes work. Even the threat of a strike was enough for the brass and the upper management to be like, no, we need to give these people what they want because we can't have that slowdown. And what we're seeing now is the studios are like, oh, we're now seeing that slowdown and it's going to just continue to get worse. And what you're going to see is they're going to try to paint the narratives like this is on the writers and the actors when it is the studios who are not coming to the table and negotiating. So there's like a side thing where it's like, hey, that's awesome for UPS. And like, that's what they're holding out hope for. And that's what they deserve as far as all these other creatives go. A little bit longer, but I do feel like that was necessary. That like, there's a light somewhere, even though it's not the end of the tunnel. You're just looking at that on-ramp, off-ramp going like, hey, good for them. And then you just keep going.
All right. Well, good for them.
See? Right?
Good for them. Let's keep going. I'm very excited. We've been trying to do this episode.
Oh, my God.
Pretty much since you joined the podcast. I don't know. Not just recorded this time, but even before that. Like, this was an idea that
you and I have been kicking it around forever, it feels like. And then something has always like cuts always in front of it. It's like, oh, we've got this guest, or like they announced the movie, or you know, something more timely. So it's very, I'm very excited to actually finally be getting to the point where we are going to be able to sit down and talk about these three birthday episodes. The way I thought that would be good to approach it would be kind of spend a few minutes talking about each one and then kind of wrap up with the comparative stuff rather than going all over the place. After listening back to our Valentine's Day episode, that was something I was inspired to do this time around, especially also we're talking about three instead of two. So that being said, I want to kick things off talking about Mixology Certification, which is the first of the three birthday episodes in the series. Coming at us, season 2, episode 10. Actually, these first two are only 8 episodes apart, but we'll get to that when we talk critical film studies. I want to kick things off with Mixology Certification. What were some of your most or least favorite things from the episode? And where does this episode stack up for you? Both kind of in terms of in season 2, and also in terms of like the series as a whole.
You know, it's funny enough, and given the circles that we hang out in the community fandom and the community podcast community, I never, ever, until I joined the community podcast community, I never thought I would be talking about this episode so much. Like, it was one of those ones where it was like, oh, I kind of like it, I don't mind. But it was like, it wasn't like one that really stuck out in my craw, and I was like always going back to watch Mixology Certification. But I'm realizing that so many of our peers just love this episode to death. And they even say it in the episode that it's kind of a darker episode. Like, it's very heavy on the character development. It's not quite a bottle episode, but it's close to it. It's kind of a nice precursor to Remedial Chaos Theory because you're seeing a lot of raw emotions from all of the characters, to where it's like who they are, who they've been, who they could possibly be. Especially when you're talking about Jeff and Britta like arguing the whole time, you're getting a little bit of Shirley's backstory where like, she's not proud of what she's done. Annie's possibility where she enjoyed becoming another person, and Abed just diving down that rabbit hole of how much he loves Farscape and kind of like actually hurting another person because of it, because he's not in that connection with that communication. He's like, oh no, I did pick up on that you were hitting on me, but like, I just really like talking about Farscape. So there's a lot here. Like, there's a surprising amount in this episode.
Before you get further, I have to call attention to the fact that on this podcast, J. Chandrasekhar himself, who directed this episode, told you in person that this was a bottle episode. So I'm going to go ahead. I know you had a little second guessing of yourself there, but I wanted to remind you of that, because I'm officially counting it as one due to that.
The only reason I say it's kind of a bottle episode is because the other ones, when you look at the Penn episode and then actual Remedial Chaos Theory, those truly are in one location. The only reason I questioned it is because there are a handful of scenes that are not at that bar. They start in the study room, and then there are a couple of scenes in the car, and then there's, I believe, the tag is at Annie's apartment or Annie's hallway, something like that.
I think that was actually the line. I don't have it verbatim, but I remember him backing off of it. It's like, oh, it's a bottle episode because it's all in that bar. He's like, in that hallway, and that car. So.
I was, you know, it's one of those things where I don't know if I've went back to rewatch the interview. I probably should, because I was probably too, like, nervous and just, like, giddy. So that's probably one of the reasons why I'm not like, oh, I can immediately pull from that interview. So I will trust you. I will trust you on that one. And you're the one who had to edit it. Like I said, I'm very much stream of consciousness, which is why I just put together that it's a nice
pop quiz. Sure. This might be the first pop quiz in 303 history. What is the actual name of the bar that they end up at? And please, let me read you the list of multiple choice options.
Oh, no. I think I can do it without multiple choice.
Fine, steal my fun.
The actual name of the bar, it's not the Red Door. It's not L Street. That's the one that they should have went to. It is it Flanahan's Hole?
No, it's the Ballroom.
Oh.
So yeah, they start off with L Street and Red Door.
All the other ones,
which we find out is actually the same place, and then are also referred to as Deuce Street, the Red Hipster, and Red Poet Society, which is one of my favorites.
And now I am being
Flanagan's
ironic.
Hole is where they wanted to go, but it was closed, so they ended up going to the ballroom.
Got you. Okay.
So Jeff's like, "That's right," and now the guys are going to the ballroom.
And now I am.
Clever, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's always close. Confusing because unless you've recently watched the episode, like, all of those names are so funny and stick in your head. Like, they every really time are. I have to, like, actually sit down and think about it when I'm thinking of all these names. So.
What's that, the Too Cool to Care teeny?
Is it?
That's, I love those interactions. Are you?
Okay, so I'm going to totally spoil mine here to set you up, but I think this is probably the easiest no-brainer out of all we're going to discuss. My episode MVP for this is Troy. It has to be. I don't think
for sure.
I don't think that anyone else is in the same universe as what Troy does in this episode. I feel like really everyone else is just setting up Troy with how they're handling their own stuff.
Mm-hmm. I do think, if memory serves from the commentaries, I think Yvette said that she had a monologue of Shirley, like, after they found the framed picture, and they're like, oh, it makes us like you that much more. Like, they said she had a monologue, and they wound up cutting it for time, which is kind of sad, because I would have been interesting to see how she would have responded directly to them enjoying kind of her debauchery days that she was so ashamed of.
I think Shirley plays well in the episode. I think she fits right nicely into the middle of the group because they're all kind of showing scars, but Shirley at least is one who has moved on from that and mm-hmm. gotten, you know, she's not that anymore, which is not something you can say about some of the scars we see from
right.
the other characters who are still very much in the throes of theirs.
Especially Britta and Jeff, for sure.
That being said, I think it's easy for me to say Pierce is the least valuable for me in this episode. And I would say in a very separate lower tier, like I said, I think Shirley's very much with everyone else. I think you kind of got Troy running away with it. But Pierce, I just, outside from the cold open, she really doesn't do anything. Like, I understand at that point in the season, they're doing a dark arc with him, not just for that episode like they are with all the characters, but
yeah, and especially since it's a bit earlier, like, and it's, you're looking at 210, like, this is
and
really
he's still going down and into mm-hmm. the darkness of his issues, whereas, like we just said, the other people are either on the other side or progressing through currently.
I would say the least, actually, you go least MVP. I would say Allison, like Annie, I don't mind the, it's almost like a C or a D storyline. Like, I think it's kind of fun. And I think she'd never really thought about like, oh, what it would be like to be another person. So she kind of runs away with it. But it's also one of those things where it's just like, well, what are we going to have her do? And it seemed like just Abed's storyline was a little bit more active. Paul F. Tompkins was the perfect person to like come in and be like, we're going to nerd out together. And he's also going to be offended when Abed spurns his advances. So like that felt really fun too. But like the Corpus Christi and having Tig Notaro as well as the bartender, like Tig sadly doesn't get a whole lot to do either because she's just playing a bartender. But it's still like, it's surprisingly, it holds up really well this episode, like as far as one of the ones that doesn't have, this is one of, is, would you say maybe the least zany episode period?
So one of the things I wrote in my notes is not funny. I mean, relative to other episodes of Community and where the bar is, like this episode is not one that causes me to laugh like as much as other episodes. No, I love it. It is probably, I'm going to tie this into one of my other answers here. This is probably a top five all-time episode for me.
Oh,
so I think very, very highly. Like you mentioned earlier, I didn't realize until getting really involved in the online community that this episode is so highly thought of just across the board. Mm-hmm. There were people during our first bracket year pushing for this to be the number one episode of the entire series. And I do think it has that kind of gravitas when it comes to character development and how important it is. You know, the Corpus Christi bit you just mentioned mm-hmm. doesn't crack me up now when I rewatch it, but that's one of the most well-known bits from the show. People do that character all the time, do the voice, mm-hmm. you know? But it's not what Community normally is in terms of just that kind of fast-paced bam, bam, bam. Like you said, there's not anything zany going on. It's very down to earth in ways that Community is typically not, but I think they make the most out of that.
and maybe, I would only ever kind of bring that up in kind of a tiebreaker situation where I'm really looking at flaws and trying to compare it against other episodes that might be more consistently laugh out loud.
That might be a better way to describe it as well. Maybe like not unzany, but maybe grounded is a better way to do it. Because that's one of the things I love about the show in general is like even in a lot of their zany episodes, there's always some kind of grounding. So I'm not used to like this. And maybe that's why I was saying it didn't always stick in my craw earlier, because it's almost the opposite where like the episode is so grounded when it does get to zany. Like there's just like flashes where Abed makes the joke that he's not a coat rack, or when there's the looking around the table in the beginning of the episode where Troy's saying like he didn't get the keg deposit back and Britta kind of shames him and then Jeff kind of gives him the thumbs up. Like there are little glimpses as well, but it's not like it's weird seeing the ratio reversed.
It's all mostly in the cold open though.
Yeah.
Like most of the actual like punchlines and stuff. Mm-hmm. But again, one of the most iconic, I would say, cold opens from the entire run of the show. So, final thoughts on mixology. Did you say where this ranks for you?
As far as like the like overall or just
as an episode overall, yeah.
As an episode, like I said, it was one of those things I definitely grew to appreciate it more in joining the community podcast community. It was one of the ones where I liked it for what it was, but I hadn't really taken a deep dive as far as like how it was measured in comparison with the rest of the episodes. And especially when you're talking about like relatively early in the season 2 run, which gets pretty gnarly and it goes all over the place. Like it's kind of nice where you have like that foundation and you haven't gone too crazy yet. When we're still approaching the paintball doubleheader at the end of the season, like it's a nice precursor, like not only to next season with Remedial Chaos Theory, but you're getting groundwork. And like we said, you're getting a little bit of more a legit isolating of Pierce. And since he's off on his own and he still hasn't quite gone down the full villain rabbit hole yet, but you can see like the seeds really being planted. And then you're also getting more. I'm never going to be upset or annoyed that I'm getting more character development. And every now and again, even an episode that has as dour of a tone, like the tone in general of this episode, it's not an uplifting episode. And Abed even comments, that's again, because I love when something is extremely meta. Abed even comments where he's like, this seems like a very dark chapter in our group's history. Like, and it is. But the ability to call it out and it still fits and it still works with the rest of them. Like this episode has risen in my estimation in the last few years.
It's the absolute crux of season 2, which I, you know, not ashamed to say is my favorite season, and is the third out of 3 episodes in a row that are my hands-down favorite run of 3 episodes in the entire series, starting with cooperative calligraphy, conspiracy mm-hmm. theories, and then mixology. So like you said, that's where right before this episode, they actually are starting to really test out the zany waters, and then they bring mm-hmm. it down for this, and then it's Christmas in the second half of the season. So this is fundamental for me in every way to the series, like the Bare Naked Ladies, absolutely fundamental. A top 5 all time for me, probably a top 3 out of season 2.
They're triple platinum, are you?
No, I'm a self-jaded asshole.
I grew up listening to the Bare Naked Ladies, so that was one of the greatest things. This is a real quick sidebar, only because we're talking about popular music briefly. Did you go see Barbie yet?
I have not.
There are some epic needle drops in that movie, and I'm excited for you to see them, because they're amazing, and you're going to love them. Same thing with the new Turtles movie.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, I did hear there were some community ties to the new Turtles movie, but I feel like we're getting off on an entire separate podcast topic now.
Of course we are.
Critical Film Studies, the second of the 3 birthday episodes here later in season 2. Like we just set up 8 episodes later. As season 2 is winding down, we get Critical Film Studies, which is the Dinner with Andre episode.
Mm-hmm,
which
my Dinner with Andre.
Community knows it by that. Jeff tries to throw a Pulp Fiction party for Abed. I still have never seen Dinner with Andre.
I haven't either.
I've been doing a community podcast for 4 years. I don't know what it is.
The technical title is My Dinner with Andre. This is, in general, and again, not quite a quote-unquote bottle episode, but you're looking at only two main locations where you have two different restaurants, the one Britta is currently bartending at, and then the one Abed picks to go with for Jeff. And again, another birthday episode where they're just hammering character development, and it's mostly exclusively Jeff and Abed, because the other one is just, we're going to put every other character into a room and kind of zaniness is going to happen. I knew it well enough. I knew My Dinner with Andre well enough to know that they were spoofing it. And the first time I saw it, it was just very nice to see Danny Pudi be able to kind of be a relaxed, different character, just really kind of emote normally. And the best thing about this episode for me is the more you watch it, is the more, not necessarily ships passing in the night, but watching the characters of Jeff and Abed and the opposite directions that both of their characters take throughout the episode, because it's kind of amazing. Because you can see, and I'm trying to remember if I don't think I came to this on my own. I think they talk about it in the commentary where they're saying you can see the moment visually when Abed knows he's bit off more than he can chew. And I think it may be during during the little girl dressed as an Indian little girl speech.
It starts before that, but it builds to a climax there. Like every time they cut away from Jeff, as Jeff is starting to kind of unravel and get into the conversation. Well, not unravel, but become a lot more vulnerable, right?
Yes.
And every time they cut to Abed, you can see it in Abed's eyes on his face. At first, it's like, oh, I might want to be careful. And the second time, it's like, oh, I might be doing some damage here. Yeah. The third time, it's like complete panic, like eyes wide open, like, oh, no.
Eyes wide open, like totally averted from his gaze, where he's not making eye contact anymore.
I need to do something about, yeah.
Then he's like,
he starts to realize that he screwed up here.
And again, it does a lot of good character development, specifically for those two, because we can get back to the rest of the group later, but that's, again, more just like zany antics. It shows you that, like, this is a good instance of, like, a good seed of, like, Jeff does legitimately want to be a good person, and he wants to be a good friend. He is going against his instincts because he really tried to cater to Abed's, like, to his, I'm having trouble, like, to his loves. He really wanted to cater to, like, he loves films, so he set up the whole Pulp Fiction thing. But, like, Jeff's like, all right, well, this is what Abed wants, I'm going to go with it. And then, like you said, as soon as he lets himself be vulnerable, as soon as that guard comes down, then Abed's like, oh, God, what did I do? And that's why it's so good to, it's honestly really impressive, too, because there's a lot of dialogue that those guys are having to do. And I think Danny said at one point, he was like, they were going to have a teleprompter for me, but he memorized, because he has that big, long monologue about pooping his pants on the set of Cougar Town, which is just such a, it's so brilliant. And the fact that they were actually able to film a scene with Danny Pudi as Abed as a background in Cougar Town. So it is canon in both shows that Abed exists in the Cougar Town universe. And if you've seen both episodes, he might have pooped his pants on the set of Cougar Town. Like, those stories, they do really pay off. And then you have the rest of them just in the 50s nostalgia diner, who the manager is just saying had been shut down. Like, it's, that just feels kind of like, what are we going to do with the rest
fork
of them? Yeah. Like, is it fork or spoon?
No, it's the greasy fork is the name of the
greasy fork?
Which,
okay,
I think is a play on the fact that it is a greasy spoon type restaurant.
Yeah. So, and I mean, like, I don't mind it. Like, the best part is Chang just, like, trolling Troy. That's the funniest part. And maybe
enjoy Chang in this episode. He's not overacting or being nefarious or obnoxious. Like, he's just being funny.
And he also, like, comes up the first time he starts to talk to Troy, he, like, moves his body like a snake. Like, he comes up, he's just going to start talking to him. And then he yells.
Yeah, he's got a real Woody Woodpecker vibes, but you're right. The motion
is very
slittery.
And he yells at Britta. They're like, you burned it? And like he so instantly doesn't blame himself, where he's like, why would you leave me alone with him? Just so there are funny parts, but about it, I do feel like it gets bogged down when you do have to keep cutting back to like them all just waiting around. Shirley has a great line about how Pulp Fiction was a 30-minute long movie about people who quote Bible verses.
She saw the edited version.
Yeah, she saw the edited version on a plane. So there are moments, but like, and then
cheeseburgers in the Bible, that's what it is.
Yeah. And then at the end when they all show up and like Pierce is dressed in a gimp suit too, to the hotel or to the other nicer restaurant, it has its moments, but I will say it's as far as these three go, it's probably my least favorite birthday episode, but that's not being said because
spoilers.
Spoilers. But like kind of how we were talking about it earlier, it's because it's so focused on the character development, you're back to that. This one, actually, I will say, there's more zany in this episode, almost strictly because Pierce is dressed as a gimp the entire time, if it even is Chevy in there, which I would highly doubt. It's probably stand-in. But
I don't know.
You think they actually convinced him to put on a gimp suit?
I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if he did it.
And he does have one of, I think his best line in the episode is, it's right before the cold open where he's like, I think he says, I'm hot, I'm sweaty, and my balls are touching a zipper. Such a funny Chevy line where it's like, oh, that's great. And then it goes right into the opening. But that's kind of my general thoughts. What are you thinking?
I love Chevy. I love Pierce this episode. It's only like, you know, three small times, but every time he always gets a genuine laugh for me every time. But you set it up perfectly at the beginning. Jeff has got to be the MVP here. I mean, at least if we're talking about, I mean, he's never, if or rarely, if ever, behaves for this long with like genuinely good intentions. That's like not who he is at all. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, it's funny because you also have Abed trying to play, you know, against his normal character type as well.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I do enjoy this episode. It's not one that I'd rewatch super often, even though it does have a couple of those big laugh moments for me. And like I said, mostly with Pierce and Chang, which is not normally for me the funniest part of most episodes. Get bogged down rewatching the Jeff and Abed parts. I know it was really well done. I just don't enjoy it as much as a lot of other parts of the show when there are so many more other enjoyable episodes and faster moving scenes. I've never seen Cougar Town. I've never seen My Dinner with Andre.
I've only seen the clip of Cougar Town with Abed in it. I haven't seen
it. Did get most of the Pulp Fiction jokes, so there was that.
Oh, I got all
was those. Was it a total strikeout for me? But I do enjoy the episode. I overall, honestly, would probably give it a C, C plus, maybe a B minus. I mean, that's the range it is for me in terms of probably both the season and the series.
Yeah,
it's just good and solid, not at the top or bottom of really any of my lists.
Agreed. And I think it's one of those things where it's like they, especially when you pick something as, I'm going to use this word and it's normally a negative word, but I don't mean it that way in this context. When you're picking something to make an homage of that's so tedious, I haven't seen My Dinner with Andre, but from everything I understand about it, it is literally just like a 2 to 3 hour movie of a conversation. And so you have to be invested. It has to be so well done and engaging. So in a 22-minute episode of network television, if you're able to convey the same sort of feelings, then the homage is definitely, you've done your job. And so I feel like even us talking about it here, because we are not that well versed or we haven't had that kind of personal interaction with the source material, I think that's probably about as best as they could do. And especially because, like, you think about the community fandom and like everyone who's watched the show and loves it so much, like that has to be such a small Venn diagram where you're talking about people who love Community who are also like, oh yeah, My Dinner with Andre. I'm sure they're out there who are like, this is exactly what I wanted and needed. But I bet you it's probably not the bulk of the fans.
Whoever they are, I'm sure they have 3D vision, which is another one of my absolute favorite lines from this episode where Britta says that. Like, what, Annie? Do I have 3D vision?
You're going to give me all your tips from your next shift? Is there any way I can spread that out so I don't get hit on my taxes? Pretty good line from that guy, too.
Yeah, no, there are some good, really good one-liners in this, I think, in ways that Mixology doesn't have. But before we get into the really good comparisons, let's talk some G.I. Jeff. Or did you have any other closing thoughts on Critical before we get to G.I. Jeff?
Only other thing is what a perfect end tag. Is the end tag with them going back to the restaurant, Abed freaking out at the bill.
What market screaming. Are you shopping in?
I love that. Anytime, I think once they realized Troy's superpower was him screaming, crying, yelling, it's like it was all good, so he could do anything. And then I think they said that was an improv of them leaving. They're like, I'm going to run. And then that's how they decided they were going to end the scene. Like,
it's a great end tag. Go Jobra.
I love this episode so fucking much. I love it.
It's grown on me a lot. It has grown on me a lot.
Cobra.
But yeah,
like, this is literally what they yell as they run around.
Season 5 and episode 11. So this is 3 years later. It's more toward the end of the show. Obviously, you know, there's season 6, but this is what I think the third to last episode from season 5. Like, after this, you get straight into kind of the two-part season-ending arc of basic stories and sandwich, but this whole episode's animated. I remember when it first came out, wasn't necessarily a huge fan on the first watch, but this is
I very much was.
I have, I don't know, really just come to appreciate more and more kind of every time I've seen it over the years. What are some of your favorite parts or favorite moments from G.I. Jeff?
This is one of those things where it's like you are combining. I mentioned it earlier very briefly. I was more of a Ninja Turtles kid growing up. G.I. Joe was like just before my time.
I'm so with you, dude.
Yeah. So, but I knew of it in popular culture. Like, I knew of it.
Oh, but yeah, my friends had G.I. Joes. I saw the commercials. Exactly. They were on the same time as our commercials.
Yeah, and so when you're seeing, and especially once they started weaving those commercials in as well, the fact that there is no live action outside of those commercials until the very end of this episode, I don't think I'm in the minority, but I love this episode so much. And when people like to write off seasons 5 and 6, this is one of the episodes I point to where I'm like, do you know how ludicrous of a pitch this is? When you think about somebody somewhere had to go, I'm sure Dan Harmon was like, all right, we're going to animate an episode. It's going to look like late 80s G.I. Joe. We're going to insert all our characters into it. It's going to be a surreal breakdown of the main character and how he's getting older. And that's the other thing is like, the fact that this is a birthday episode isn't revealed until the last 3 minutes of the episode. So it's not only that, but it's beyond meta. You have Dan Harmon voicing a character named Sleep Apnea. You have Britta being called Buzzkill is so great. Annie called I don't think there's a single point of this episode
Names are absolutely spot on.
I love that every time we made a joke with my other podcast, my old podcast. It was one of our buddies' name was Dave Hearn, and it was always Dave Hearn's got kids, because every time Shirley talks in this episode, she ends every line with I have 3 kids, and it's so dumb, but I love it so much. All of it, like, and like John Oliver being like, just so you know, I have a twin. My name's Zigzam, and my twin's name is Mixmax. And just so you know, if you hurt one of us, you hurt the other one. And then he gets shot, and they cut to his brother, who's a waiter, and just immediately goes down in pain while he's working. Like, there's not one, like, we're talking about the other two, where it was all character development and all grounded and very little zany. And this is the polar opposite of that. But this is something I go back to all the time. I quote this episode, like the guy walking away and Jeff's like, isn't that right, Cold Shoulder? Cold Shoulder? Like, it's so good.
All their days are totally
on
the nose. And I love how, I think it would have been really easy, even when you're going all out like this to mm-hmm. do an episode, to really just kind of focus on, you know, animating the main characters or mm-hmm. having the main, but they bring in all of the beak, you know, you've got the Dean, you've got Duncan, you've got Hickey, you've got Chang, mm-hmm. like they mm-hmm. really bring in a ton of people and get as many people to participate in this episode.
It just happened
when Duncan and Hickey appear just randomly, like halfway through the episode.
Hickey tries to do a back handspring and hurts his back. So many small little, I love the, and then them calling out the like inadequacies of the animation at the time where like, and then you're going to have vocal sync issues and like it comes out of Shirley's mouth, even though Jeff is speaking. And the reuse of the animation where they
all take
a rock. Yeah. And they,
in terms
they
of animation, very cheap.
They take out a rock and they knock out the guards. And then it just like reuses that animation like 3 different times.
It worked before.
So funny. And that's the ironic part is they still put a fair amount of emotional weight into the show. And I think that's one of the things that really makes me love this series all over again, because they do it as like the voiceover in those commercials with the little kids. But then the little kids have the lines too, where like he has a mind of its own, and it's like they talk about how he's having like a nervous breakdown, and yeah, the fact that they still are able to put weight in something as ridiculous as a mental breakdown set with the main characters of a show, and they make it make sense, and they actually have a weighted scene at the end. To me, it's one of those reasons why it's like this is exactly what I love this show for. And that's why when people write off seasons 5 and 6, I'm like, you're missing some great stuff in those last seasons.
Where does this episode rank for you then? Where does this come in?
In 5, it's very high. It's higher for me because I love high concept. I love meta. It's probably my favorite birthday one because it is zany and I get more laughs out of this than anything else. This is one of those ones where like, I don't know how many rewatches I'm up to at this point, but like there are still small things I'm finding in the episodes that are like even funnier. The way Rob Schraub is able to do a Cobra Commander impression, and it's really, it's so funny, and they call him out on his lisps too. But it's, there's still emotional weight to it. It just makes me very happy, this episode.
Yeah, it's not just a complete whack attack across the board. They actually do tie it into the story. So even though the spectacle, the adventure of the rest of the episode is, you know, what's so unique about it, and what I think in large part gives it such great rewatchability, and probably, you know, even more rewatchability than these other two birthday episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm quite willing to go where you are yet, but I want to get you locked into stone here before I commit. You're putting this number one?
For my three, yeah, I love this one. We didn't even talk about Abed being called Fourth Wall, which is like just the perfect... Perfect.
Well, and it also ends up being very on the nose because mm-hmm. he navigates them through the episode and mm-hmm. through the three different universes and even diagrams them at one point. We've got the cartoon world, the real world, and then the middle place, which is the kids, the commercial world, mm-hmm. I guess, as it were.
And then I also wanted to just because I think it's an honorary birthday episode. I think Meow Meow Beans at least should be discussed because that's all Hickey says in the entire episode is it's my birthday.
Yes, I did consider that. I feel like that is definitely worthy of an honorable mention. And
it is an honorable mention.
You remember to do that. I didn't think that it had the same strength of connection as these other three, but. You know, that's part of the power, you know, producer's power. So
yeah,
there you go.
But for me personally, yes, G.I. Jeff is my favorite birthday episode.
Okay, so what's two then? What's your number two?
Two would be Mixology. That's okay. Where my two would be for
so going,
all the reasons we just
G.I. Jeff, Mixology, and then Critical Film Studies as your third.
Yep.
It's interesting. I wasn't necessarily expecting that. I think that my reaction to G.I. Jeff has kind of been very opposite of what you have been discussing regarding Mixology in terms of how the community has kind of shaped your opinion of that episode, or at least you've noticed it having mm-hmm. significance, maybe in ways that you didn't before. I never thought this was a hugely liked episode, and it seems like this is one that's kind of more polarizing online. I usually see people that are really aggressively defending it or particularly not enjoying it. But like I mentioned earlier when we started talking about G.I. Jeff, it's one for me that I do continue to enjoy more almost every time that I see it. That being said, I don't know how I could put it ahead of Mixology, man. That feels like the fact that it's even something I'm considering.
That's probably pretty
big for
you. I think
says a lot.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that my opinion on some of these episodes can still change this far 10 years after the episode, 4 years into the start of this podcast where we talk about Community, you know, allegedly monthly, like, I'm gonna stick with Mixology just to be a coward. I'm going to go G.I. Jeff 2 again. Critical Film Studies for me is a fine episode. Maybe even, I would say, above average in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it hits the rewatchability or the levels of G.I. Jeff, and I don't think it has the absolute fabric of every character and all of the development and all of the quintessential moments that you get out of Mixology.
Yeah.
So I think I would order them in that way. So really our only divergence is a flip of one and two, but yeah, at least for me, those are very, very, very close.
For me, I could go back. I could put on G.I. Jeff right now. Like, and that's the only thing is, like, I think rewatchability for me pushes things up a long way. And while, ironically, just because some of the rewatches I did, the show wasn't completely done yet. And so I think I watched Mixology Certification a lot more in general than I've seen G.I. Jeff. That's one of the reasons, too, where it's like, I still feel like I'll discover new things from G.I. Jeff, whereas Mixology, yeah, gun to my head, I could probably quote
I think
most
you could
of that
put
episode.
Critical in that thing, too, because just in general, mm-hmm. I think season two, I've probably seen 100 more times than season five.
Right.
I don't know. I just made that number up, but it seems fairly reasonable.
All right. 100? Sure. Let's go with that.
Let's say going on triple digits. I don't know. But I will go to the grave defending this as a true birthday episode in spirit and execution.
I think it definitely qualifies, especially because the last few minutes, it grounds the rest of the episode to where it's like, oh, he's literally having a midlife crisis, and we got to see it from his point of view in his brain. It's easily justifiable, in my opinion.
Yeah, and they're all there for him. You know, it's not a nice tight winger speech that gives you a sense of possible hope at the end of this episode. It's the rest of the group being there for him, right?
So, fun fact, if you would have included Meow Meow Beans as a birthday episode, then there would have been only two seasons that would have had two birthday episodes each, season two and season five. Weird.
So close. I feel like I really blew it there, right?
Nah, it's fine. It's because I brought it up to you a couple weeks ago. The reason I'm fine with it is because it's only a line. It's not a plot point. Like, that's why you can argue for G.I. Jeff, because it is 100% the plot of the show versus Meow Meow Beans. It's only like a line. It's a line that he repeats, and that's the only reason I remembered it. But like, it doesn't come up other than Hickey wearing a hat and saying it's his birthday and eating cake. That's like his whole character arc in that episode.
And quite the picture.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's how I feel about these, Dan. Man, it's been a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate you bringing me up to speed on some of the not as happy news there at the beginning. Like I said, I do hope things continue to work out there. We obviously will continue to support labor and root for them here.
Go unions. Woo.
Any other last thoughts on the community birthday episodes, Dan, before we get out of here this month?
No, I think we did an okay job holding us to our own standards and peeling back the curtain. We were like, we're going to try to be concise and we're going to try to be short about this one. And compared to how much we normally ramble on, I think we did an okay job.
I mean, it's less than double what we were shooting for, which I will say rarely do we come in at less than double our goal time. So that is certainly progress. But yeah, it also perfectly ties into G.I. Jeff. Keep it short.
There you go.
Graffiti is bad. Go play sports.
You don't know. And knowing is half the battle.
There you go. And that does it for this episode of Apartment 303. As always, you can find Apartment 303 on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. For Dan, this is Dave signing off. We will see you in the next episode of Apartment 303.